You've got legal issues.
We have attorneys that focus on helping solve legal problems. Let's talk.
You're listening to AttorneyTalkRadio.com. Here is your show host, Brian French.
Hi, this is Brian French with AttorneyTalkRadio.com. Today, our special guest is Bob Kleinecht, and Bob is an estate planning attorney based in Naples, Florida. And Bob has over 15 years of experience in advanced estate planning. He's got a JD degree from Drake Law School and is a member of the Florida Bar Estate and Trust Section. He also is a member of the Estate Planning Committee for the Florida Bar, as well as the Asset Protection Committee of the Florida Bar. You can reach Bob directly by calling him at 239-206-3454. You're also welcome to visit his website. His law firm name is Oakstone Law, and his website is www.oakstonelaw.com. That's OAKSTONE law.com. Again, you can reach him by calling 239-206-3454. He also has a free ebook on the top 10 mistakes made in estate planning. Bob, welcome to the Attorney Talk Radio Show.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Doing great, Bob. Thank you for joining us. Bob, I know you've been a practicing attorney for quite some time, and I also understand that people, when they have estate planning issues, many times this is kind of end-of-life planning, and it can be very stressful for most folks. How do people get through it, and then how do they feel confident that they've done a good job on their estate plan?
It's a great question, Brian. If you've been an estate planning attorney for any length of time, you come to understand that it's not necessarily everyone's favorite topic, first of all. So this is a question and a concern that we're pretty used to dealing with. And we've addressed this a little bit on the website, and I think that there are a number of concerns or pains, if you will, that people have when they think about estate planning, particularly if they haven't done it yet or done a whole lot of it. And the concerns usually are, number one, it tends to be morbid. Number two, they're concerned it's going to be expensive. Number three, it's confusing. There are a lot of technical issues involved. Number four, it's personal. It's kind of hard to admit you don't know exactly what to do for your own family. And number five, I think people are concerned it will be tedious and a lot of hard work. And really, I think a good estate planner understands these pains, first of all, but moreover, addresses them. And, you know, this doesn't need to be a morbid process, for example. We can start by talking about what's made you and your family successful and really focus on what your goals and objectives are. As far as expense goes, sure, it can be expensive, but so can that trip to Europe or the new BMW and lots of other things, and it's just a matter of perspective there. Confusing, perhaps, but one of the things I think we do a nice job of is really kind of distilling the more complicated issues down to, look, here's really what you're looking at here, and these are the questions you need to answer. And of course, it gets personal at times. I mean, this is about your family and your loved ones, and you need advisors you can trust. So it is a little bit of work, but what we try to do is, you know, have a conversation up front, really get to know your family, your goals, your objectives, and in some cases help you articulate what those are, because many people just aren't quite sure what they can do. And we can really usually get that kind of thinking and work, if you will, out of the way up front in an initial meeting or two. And then the rest of the work's really on me to get the plan put together.
It's amazing. People spend a lifetime building up their assets. So most certainly it makes sense to making the investment to get an estate plan done well, to make sure that their wishes are executed when they're no longer around. And many families obviously have special needs. Do most people actually need a trust, and or, you know, what is your opinion on that? Is a will sufficient in some regards, or should most everybody have a trust?
It's my opinion that a trust is a very valuable tool. because of course you can't, it's hard to talk about estate planning without the topics of trust coming up. There are a number of reasons why you might want a trust. Need is always something that's personal to you and what your goals and really your primary concerns are, but there are a few key reasons why a trust is a great tool. And the first one being privacy. We've all seen in on the news and in the papers these various celebrity wills or celebrity deaths, if you will, in which their last wills and testaments are being dissected by these so-called legal experts who insist they would do this differently or this is not how you manage your estate. And I think the sad thing is here is that there are real human beings involved and families and loved ones that whose inheritance, I suppose, is being dissected in the public forum. So the trust is a really great tool to preserve privacy and avoid really all of that. Another great reason for trust is protection. If you simply leave an inheritance to a child or children, that asset or that share really becomes subject to any number of problems that child might have, whether that's divorce, that's a big concern of a lot of our clients, making sure that the assets stay in the bloodline, for example. And of course, we live in a litigious world, and a trust can be a great tool to protect the assets from things like lawsuits and also perhaps bankruptcy or creditor issues. Perhaps the child has started a business that went south or got in an accident. I don't mean to dwell on a negative, but certainly a trust can provide a lot of protection from these hazards of today's society. And then finally, many people use trust as a way to sort of guarantee professional management of the assets once they're gone. A typical scenario, an individual is very used to managing the family assets and paying all the bills and taking care of the finances and investments and wants to make sure that perhaps for a spouse or perhaps for children that professional management continues. And by using a trust, you'll select a trustee that can offer that professional management going forward.
When people look to create a trust, what are the key elements of having a trust, and what should they be looking for in a trustee?
Well, the key elements of a trust, it's a great question. Really, the key elements of a trust are fairly simple. You have a grantor, or sometimes called a trust creator or a settlor. This is the person that creates the trust. Sometimes you can create a trust during your lifetime. Other times you might create a trust that comes into effect at your death, and that's a very common tool known as a revocable trust. There is that person, there is the beneficiary, whom, of course, you have created the trust for, and then finally there's the trustee, and a trust in itself really is just a relationship between a trustee who has legal title over the assets of the trust, and the beneficiary who has beneficial title. So it's a trustee's job to own, hold, and manage trust assets for the benefit of that beneficiary. And when you're talking about trustees, this is a really key point. You've got a few different types of trustees, really three options, if you will. You can choose an individual to serve as trustee. You can, of course, go and select a corporate trustee, a bank, or a trust company. And then finally, there's a newer hybrid model, if you will, called a family trust company. And this is an entity that a family establishes to serve as trustee of just that family's trust. And that can get fairly detailed and is really very customizable entity. And of course, when you're choosing trustees, there are a number of things to keep in mind.
Bob, what are the characteristics of who might be chosen for being the trustee?
A great question. There are a number of really key characteristics you should consider when choosing a trustee, whether that's a person or a corporate trustee, particularly when it comes to individuals or persons that you might choose as trustee. One of the key characteristics is they tend to be known to you or known by you, and they may be, for example, a family member, a family friend, maybe a longtime business partner, a professional advisor, A number of clients have sort of that former employee, right-hand man or woman, if you will, who maybe worked in the business for a long time. But these individuals, they need to be really, first and foremost, trustworthy. It's a very, pardon the pun, but there's a lot of trust involved in trust. But also, and this applies to corporate trustees as well, they need to be financially savvy. There's a lot of ins and outs of the investment world that they need to be familiar with, or at least capable of getting familiar with. So you got some investment savvy, some tax savvy, and also in the case of individuals, you'll need to have the time available. You know, someone that's a busy professional working 50, 60 hour weeks, and then expected to also serve as trustee in their part time, particularly in the beginning stages of setting up a trust, that can be a tall order. This individual needs to really be able to delegate and hire competent advisors, such as accountants and tax professionals, that sort of thing.
And there's a strong duty of a trustee to handle the affairs in a prudent manner. So I think that's a lot of responsibility for most family members to assume, and kind of a quick learning curve to understand all the responsibilities that they have, I'm sure. We're speaking to Bob Kleinecht, and Bob is an estate planning attorney based in Naples, Florida. He has over 15 years of advanced estate planning experience. He has a JD degree from Drake Law School and is a member of the Florida Bar, as well as the estate planning committees, estate planning as well as asset protection. You can reach Bob directly by calling his office at 239-206-3454. You can also visit his website, oakstonelaw.com. That's oakstonelaw.com. And if you visit his website, you can actually go to a webpage and download a free ebook on the 10 mistakes made in estate planning. So that's a great thing for people to have access to, and to prevent making some serious mistakes when they do their estate plan. So that's great, Bob.
Yeah, thanks. There's a lot of good stuff in there. It's not just the mistakes, but also sort of how to protect yourself from them.
Bob, tell me a little bit about what a good corporate trustee would do, and how do they handle the affairs of an estate or an estate plan?
A good corporate trustee really comes down to the individuals that it hires, frankly. So what you're looking for is people with all the same qualities we just discussed. And in order to do that, you really need to get to know your, and every corporate trustee has a different term for this individual, but usually it's something like relationship manager or trust officer or wealth advisor. You need to get to know that person and really understand understand their level of experience and their competence in all the areas we just discussed. One of the things you can think about when using a corporate trustee, because of course they bring that backbone, if you will, they bring that back office experience, all of the resources to bear as far as the accounting work and just keeping track of everything. In order to build in maybe a personal touch, a lot of people are concerned with corporate trustees, do they really know my family? You might consider adding a family member as a co-trustee, and that way you sort of take the load off the individual family member or even friend of the family, and you give the bulk of the burden to the corporate trustee, who's really better suited, frankly, for all the administrative details. But you've got that individual touch that can really bring a personal point of view. So one final thing to think about is to consider adding a trust protector, which is a fairly recent concept in the law. But this is an individual that can sort of be pre-designated or designated in advance, if you will, to step in if things go south. So perhaps this trust protector can come in and resolve a dispute between trustees, for example. So just a couple of things to think about there.
Bob, let's say I have a trust. What are the elements, or what are some of the things that I should include in my trust when I craft that?
It seems like every year the trust document gets a little bit longer, and a lot of times people will ask me, what is all this? What is this 30, 40, 50 pages sometimes? And the answer is, a lot of it is boilerplate, particularly the back half of the doc, the fine print, and not every single sentence or clause is going to apply to your situation. For the most part, all that boilerplate is there to sort of preempt disputes, if you will, and provide clear instructions to both the trustee and the beneficiaries. So that's kind of the bulk of the paper, if you will, but the more, almost the more important parts of the trust document itself really begin with the distribution clauses, and that's the who gets what, when, where, and how. And there are a couple different ways to go with this. There's sort of the mandatory distribution versus a discretionary distribution. And by that I mean, you know, some trusts say, well, pay all of the income from the trust out to my child for life. And some other trusts might say the trustee may pay as much of the income or principal to the child for the child's lifetime in the trustee's discretion. And the reason for that distinction is that when you give the trustee discretion, you are really allowing that trustee to sort of analyze the situation and make a judgment call. And again, the trustee might be that individual coupled with a corporate trustee, or might be a corporate trustee alone, might be an independent third party. But the point of using the discretionary distribution as opposed to mandatory distribution is that, let's say that individual gets into a little bit of trouble, if the trustee has discretion whether or not to distribute, well, then the assets are protected and inside the trust. If the trustee has no discretion and is required to distribute assets out to that troubled beneficiary, then you've just removed all the protections that you worked so hard to build with the trust in the first place. So that's kind of a key first point, thinking about, you know, are we going to insist that assets are forced out of the trust to beneficiaries who don't sometimes don't need or want them, versus giving the trustee the ability to pull back the reins a little bit. A common mistake we see is, well, you know, I'll have a quarter of the trust paid out to the child at age 30, maybe a third paid out at 35, a half paid out at 40, et cetera. And, you know, that way we'll sort of stagger things and give them two or three bites at the apple, which is really great and reasonable in theory, but when you think about it a little further, it's actually quite arbitrary. Someone is just as likely to get divorced at age 40, perhaps more likely age 40 than they are at age 30. So why pick particular years to force assets out? The best course, in my opinion, is to focus on choosing good trustees and giving them the power and the discretion to function effectively.
Bob, how are IRAs dealt with as far as planning in the estate plan? I know, obviously, in an IRA, you designate a beneficiary, but I'm sure there's additional planning strategies that could be applied.
Sure. This is a bit of a hot-button issue lately. In the past year, there was a Supreme Court case, Clark versus Ramaker, in which an IRA account inherited by a daughter from her mother was ultimately held to be not protected in bankruptcy. And the daughter went through bankruptcy, and the court ultimately decided that the IRA was available for to satisfy the daughter's debts, which is really unfortunate because those accounts typically enjoy a heightened level of protection from creditors. So what folks are looking for as far as protection can really be achieved by making sure that the IRA or the retirement account — I use IRA sort of interchangeably with 401k and other retirement accounts — but making sure that the account's beneficiary designation names the trust as the beneficiary, then the assets are sort of protected by the IRA, but also protected by the trust. So anything that comes out of the IRA is still in the trust. You can enjoy some of those creditor protections. If you simply leave the IRA outright to a beneficiary, since this recent case, we're finding that the creditor protection we once thought was there for those accounts is really much weaker than we thought.
Bob, what are some of the flexibility that can be built into the a trust agreement, especially when it comes to dealing with issues of maybe former or the existing trustee may be a kind of a disappointment that can be included in that trust document.
Oh, this is another great point, Brian. A lot of people think of trust and they think, well, it's just going to be locked up and my child will never have access to it. And that's a common misconception. And I always like to help people out by pointing out all the different things you can do with a trust to enable or empower the child and really give them most of the benefits of outright ownership, but coupled with all those strong protections we've been talking about. So, for example, the flexibility that you can build into the trust is one of the things I think we already mentioned was permitting a child to act as his or her own trustee. And you can draft the trust a certain way that you have the child acting as his or her own trustee, making distributions to him or herself under a particular standard, which legally we refer to as an ascertainable standard. And as long as your trust is drafted that way, and actually you'll still achieve those protections. And again, you can name the child as a co-trustee, and that's another way to sort of have your cake and eat it too. Other things you can do, you can allow the trustee to create separate trusts to isolate pockets of money. So perhaps your child would like to start a new business. So we can segregate a pool of assets to seed that new venture and thereby protect the remaining trust assets. And then, of course, trusts can be drafted to provide very generous loan terms. So if a child would like to borrow money to purchase a house, for example, rather than simply distributing the assets out to the child to buy the home, the child could perhaps borrow from the home. That's a great tool for protection against divorce. And then finally, there are, I think this is what you were alluding to a minute ago, Brian, powers of appointment are very powerful. And this is a power that you would give to your child, for example, to allow them to determine exactly how the assets will flow at their death. So, for example, maybe your child has three children and your three grandchildren, one of them is a teacher, one of them is a surgeon, and the other just started the next Google. So the third grandchild probably doesn't need a whole lot in the way of additional assets. With a power of appointment, your child could actually sort of rearrange the distribution so that it's not a third, a third, a third, and maybe will be split between the surgeon and the teacher and maybe not even equally. And these powers of appointment can be given to the child to so that in their will they can adjust the shares, if you will. And, of course, you can draft your powers of appointment to create any number of limitations on those shares as you see fit, really. Very customizable. They're sometimes called powers of disappointment because, of course, if a grandchild annoys your child, then your child has the ability to disappoint. So that's another great tool.
Well, that's great. There are certainly many strategies in the estate plan that can create that flexibility that people need and want. Tell me a little bit about estate taxes. I know estate taxes have been kind of a bit of a yo-yo over the last 10, 15 years, and the exemption amount is, what, $5 million now? And so for many people, that may or may not be an issue. Tell me a little bit about the outlook for estate taxes. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, sure. I'll just pull out the crystal ball here. Right. It's about $5 million. It's actually $5,340,000 for 2014. It'll be $5,430,000 for 2015. That's per person. So if you're a married couple, you've got 10.9-ish of exemption before you even have to think about estate taxes or gift taxes. And that's really kind of a combined gift and estate tax exclusion. So if you make $5 million of gifts in your lifetime, then if you have additional assets you leave via your estate at your death, then those will be subject to estate taxes. You've already used your $5 million. So it can get kind of technical, and we don't need to go into all the details here, but that number used to be $600,000 per person. So the estate tax is something that used to affect a lot more people than it does now. But that being said, there's really no telling what Congress will do. And the way the markets have been going the past couple of years, that $5 million number, it might be something that quite a few more people are exceeding in the, you know, maybe 10 years to come. So the important thing here to think about is that your trust be drafted with the flexibility to deal with any surprises. You don't want to be caught in a situation that a lot of people were caught in about 6 or 7 years ago, when Congress was really dragging its feet on whether the estate tax would be repealed or is not going to be repealed, and you had all these estate plans out there that were going to do one thing if there was an estate tax and another thing if there wasn't. And that's really the worst case scenario, because you don't want the tax tail to wag the dog.
Bob, what are some of the things that people should look at? Now, I understand if somebody has a trust that was written pre-2012, it may make some good sense to have that reviewed again in regard to changes in tax law and other issues that can come into play. Can we talk a little bit about those trusts that were drafted pre-2012?
The thing that happened is, which for years and years there was a very consistent estate tax regime, and it was $600,000, and then it was $1 million of exemption. So your typical AB or credit shelter trust estate plan would say, put the maximum amount that can pass estate tax free into this credit shelter trust, or this family trust, we'll call it. Everything else will go into the marital trust for my spouse. So when that was $1 million, the exemption amount was $1 million, you would put $1 million into the family trust. And everything else, let's say it was the $3 million estate, $2 million would go into the marital trust. So then you had $1 million family trust, which could benefit the kids and the spouse. You had $1 million family trust, which could benefit the kids and the spouse, and then $2 million marital trust, which was really only for the benefit of the spouse. When the exemptions ratcheted up first to $2 million, then to $3.5 million, and now to $5 million, if you take that same estate with that same estate plan, you're taking, the instructions are to take the maximum amount that can pass estate tax-free and put it in the family trust. So what's happened now is you're taking the entire estate, because the maximum amount is $5 million, but your estate is $3 million, and you're putting that maximum, the entire estate, that maximum amount, into the family trust, which means you no longer have a marital trust, which could, of course, lead to very annoyed spouses. So that's something that it's a little bit of a trap that Congress kind of tricked us into with the repeal versus no repeal. So if your will or revocable trust was drafted before, say, about 2012, like by then most estate planners had figured this out and built sort of alternate scenarios into the document, if you will. But I'd say pre-2011, pre-2012, if your documents are that age, that vintage, you probably should get them checked out.
We're speaking to Bob Kleinecht, and Bob is an estate planning attorney based in Naples, Florida. And if you do have a trust that was drafted pre-2012, we recommend and suggest that you call Bob. Bob, if somebody does have a trust, you know, obviously they'll set an appointment. What is the review process like?
Well, for us, we have a six-step family wealth planning process. So every person that works with us goes through this process. So it's not just a, you know, fill out the form and we give you a pile of meaningless documents. We really take you through this six-step process. And first step is a consultation and a roadmap. We'll have an initial call. We'll ask you to help us out by filling out a little bit of a workbook, and then we set an agenda for our initial meeting, and then we have that initial meeting, and then that's when we really just take the time to listen, understand what your goals and your objectives are, what your family's like, what your concerns are, if any, what your questions are. A lot of people have a lot of questions, and we just take whatever time is needed to answer them. The second step is the plan design step, where we actually think about the best way to implement and to reach the goals that you've ascertained. And then the third step is the plan development, where we prepare a custom estate planning flow chart for you to visually depict what the proposed plan is. You take a look at that, you provide any needed revisions or new ideas, and then step four is where we actually sit down and execute all the documents and then put it together in a portfolio for you. Step five is a step that is often overlooked. So many estate planning firms, you'll get up to that fourth step and be done, and you'll leave the law firm with a pile of documents signed. But the next step, particularly with a revocable trust, is to make sure all your assets are titled the way they should be. So if you are concerned about probate and privacy and all the things we talked about earlier, and you go with a revocable trust, and then you don't ever put anything into that trust, and anything that sits outside of that trust in your individual name, excluding things like joint account and life insurance, but anything that's in your individual name will become a probate asset and be subject to all those concerns we talked about earlier. So that's really a critical step, that step five, and we call that trust funding. And then step six is, for us, it's a lifetime communication and review process, which includes an annual complimentary review of your plan and just to get together and talk about, do you have any new grandkids or children in some cases, any new things that popped up throughout the year. So that's really a key component too, because things change over time. So it's important to take a look at least once a year and make sure the plan's still doing what you want it to do.
That's excellent, Bob. Now, Bob, I understand you also work with estates and trust documents for people that are beyond Naples under certain circumstances. So if somebody lives in, let's say, Sarasota or maybe on the east coast of Florida, you would kind of like explore some of the alternatives and strategies with them and see if it would be a good fit for them to work with you right there in Naples?
Absolutely. I've been known to travel far and wide for clients. I have clients that I work very closely with who are sort of split between New York and Florida. So I've gone up to New York many, many times and clients in the Carolinas and certainly really anywhere within reason in Florida, as long as it makes sense. If it's a good fit for us and for the family, we're certainly willing to travel or meet over the phone or even via Skype in some cases. So we're very flexible that way. Yes, thank you, Brian.
Excellent, excellent. We're speaking to Bob Kleineck, and Bob is an estate planning attorney based in Naples, but handles estate planning throughout Florida. We highly recommend that people book an appointment with Bob, explore their opportunities as far as their crafting of their estate plan or their will. You can call Bob directly at 239-206-3454. That's 239-206-3454. We also suggest that people visit his website, oakstonelaw.com. And if you go to that website and you sign up for his ebook, you'll get the ebook, How to Avoid the Top 10 Mistakes in Estate Planning. So, a great opportunity for people to learn. Bob, thank you so much for being on the Attorney Talk Radio Show. I think people will be well taken care of if they book an appointment with you and explore their estate planning strategies with a professional attorney like yourself. So thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you, Brian. This has been just great.
You've been listening to AttorneyTalkRadio.com with your show host, Brian French. Remember to download and share this episode on social media with your tribe. AttorneyTalkRadio.com.